This is a Pinball News production.
Yeah, well, my name is Derek Fugate. I'd like to thank Rob Burke and Mike Pasak for asking me to come up here and talk to you guys about what I do. I like to collect weird and hard to find pinball machines. And I'd like to start off by just telling you how I kind of got into the hobby and how I got started with pinball. What happened is my uncle co-owned a roller rink in eastern Kentucky. I grew up in eastern Kentucky. It was a small town. And they had the latest video games. This was in the early 1980s. And they only had a couple of pinball machines at the time. They had a Black Knight and a Sinbad in there. But I only played the video games. When I got started, I liked the video games because I learned the patterns to them. You know, I had my favorites and stuff, and I was pretty young at the time. I had been, you know, 6-7 years old, so I really never got into pinball. But, you know, as I would learn the patterns of video games, they kind of lost their, you know, they lost their luster after a while. You'd play a video game and you could, you know, I'd play Galaga and it was one of my favorite games. And I would, like, enjoy playing the game for, you know, I could play for 20, 30 minutes, you know, on a quarter. And I'd go to a pinball machine, I'd play, you know, and then I'd just be, you know, 30 seconds or a minute later, I was down. You know, that was before ball saves and stuff on pinball, you know. So my dad always enjoyed pinball, so he kind of started getting me into it more and more. And there was a operator at this time. This went all the way up into the mid 80s into the early 90s. There was an operator out of Hazard, Kentucky, Combs Amusement, and they operated the old Bally and early Stearns solid state stuff. So it was interesting. That's when I started. When I started getting into pinball, I really started playing these early Bally games. So I was playing, you know, Space Invaders and Future Spa and you know, some of the common 8-Ball. Globetrotters was one of my favorite games at the time. And there was a dairy bar in the town where I grew up, and they would always rotate these games. And when I would play, this was the time when you'd, you know, you could win a bunch of specials on the game, and it was all about, you know, you tried to get, you just, you know, get your replays and stuff. And when I got to that point where I was really playing a bunch of those games, I'd go to the mall. The first time I remember, we'd always go out to the malls in Lexington. It's the biggest city around the town where I grew up. And they always had, you know, they started getting games in there, like the Williams, when they started getting a Pinbot and Comet and Cyclone and some of these, you know, new generation of machines. They just seemed so much more advanced. I mean, they were, obviously, but the operator was still operating these old games. So I kind of got, you know, into pinball, even though it wasn't my generation. I was playing games that were just after the EM era. So I started, you know, that kind of got me into that. And we were in, my dad and I were in Lexington Mall in Kentucky there. And that's when I first heard about Pinball Expo. It was interesting enough, there was a poster. It was in a Bally's Aladdin's Castle. And this was 1990. My first expo was 90 when Simpsons, the Daddy E. Simpsons, we did the factory tour. That was a really cool time, if any of you guys remember that expo. But I remember when we saw that poster about Expo, we started coming. That's what, you know, my first year here. And then I have been every year since. The only year I missed, 1 year in 95. But I've been to Expo all through that time. And, you know, growing up down in eastern Kentucky, I'd find at this time, you know, you'd go to you'd play the newest games that were the new generation pinballs in the early 90s coming out, but you would also find a lot of these older games, and that's how I got into finding some of the EMs out there. And well, if any of you guys remember, I back then at that time, a funny story was I remember buying a KISS pinball machine in Expo. It was in the auction. They always had the big auction at the Ramada. There was 91 or 92, and I picked up a Kiss for 265. It was a pretty nice game because a Bally Kiss and Williams Phoenix were the cheapest machines in that auction at that time. And then, you know, soon after, I guess, eBay and everything happened, and these games started to, of course, you know, change. But back then, you know, I would bring a bunch of machines and commonly sell Bally solid-state games between $100 $300 for a lot of that early stuff. So, of course, it's become a lot more collectible now. The game you see here on the... I've got Alien Star here. I'll get to this now. This was the first machine that I actually got. I got this for a Christmas present. My parents surprised me. It was in 1988, and they surprised me with this machine that Christmas. And I remember the game was about, well, it came out in 84. I think it was about, you know, been on location maybe a year or two at the time, but because the operators were putting so many newer games out, that my dad picked this game up for $400, and it was basically like a brand new game. But that's, you know, nowadays you look at an Addams Family, which is looks fresh, even though it's, you know, almost 20 years old. It's interesting there. And if any guys played Alien Star before?
On visual pinball.
It's actually a really good game. Very, very underrated game. In my opinion, it's a time when Gottlieb with Milestar. They were doing these games. This game was actually not a copy. They did a lot of games where they were copying other games at the time, like El Dorado City Gold and Royal Flush Deluxe and Jacks to Open and those games. But with Alien Star, it was interesting. You have a multi-ball spinner that you can light for 10,000 a spin, and it's actually a really good game. An interesting note, though, on most Alien Stars I've seen, the coin door that you can see in this picture is the smaller, skinnier coin door. And the next picture I'm going to show here is my collection. These are all sample games, Milestar sample games. And that's the Alien Star. That was my first machine. Of course, I plan to always, you know, hang on to that machine. But that coin door is the larger size coin door. And I don't really know. The production run on Alien Star, I believe, is 1,065. El Dorado City of Gold, which I have here, it's in the Classics tournament here. I actually own two of those El Dorado City of Golds. One's a Milestar and one's a Premier. A lot of people didn't know that they actually made two versions of that game. They made 160 of the Milestar games, and they made 735 of the Premier games. And I got that information from Sam Harvey, who's out there. He knows his history about machines. That's for sure. And the Ready Aim Fire over the gear, it's also a test game from Gottlieb. If any of you guys ever seen that, I believe there's one at the Pinball Hall of Fame out in Vegas. There, that's another unique game. But this was during a time where Gottlieb was, you know, the Milestar years with Gottlieb, and there were some pretty good games. And unique games like Alien Star. And anybody tell me who this is on the John Osborne, of course. There, John Osborne's one of my favorite designers with Gottlieb. He didn't do too many games. He's most known for Haunted House, but John Osborne has done a lot of innovative designs with his EM games. Some of his unique features with Rockstar, Rob Burke brought a Rockstar. It's out there again in the Classics. You guys can play this weekend. That game was designed with a lane change at the top for the skill shot. There's a 10,000-point skill shot at the top, and it's actually really interesting that he had designed the game, would have been the first lane change on a game, and then Firepower soon came out after because, as he said, it was really hard to get some of these things passed through management. And but he had a lot of these ideas that would come about. And his some of his games were just, like I said, very very innovative and very much so. As I'm going to move on here to Strange World. I really like Strange World. This game, any of you guys out there play Strange World before? And yeah, I know it's a cool game. It's a game. This is the very end of the EM era, so they were going into the solid state games. A lot of these games were unfortunately overlooked because everybody wanted Sinbads and Close Encounters, and most of the games that Krinsky was designing in this time. But Strange World's got a really neat grid pattern where you have to light up the one through four in three color series, and it lights a special. So the game can be one of the most deceiving games. You can walk up to this game and just put up a great score. You can roll, 200,000 points, and then you can play and get 20 to 40,000 points. It's really odd how this game is so hard with inconsistencies on the design. It's obviously, once you hit the series in the one through four, it will light 5,000 points on the targets and spot targets you need. But it's just a really it's a really good game. And some other things I don't know if you guys know about, I'll mention real quick about that John Osborne's told me before. But while he worked at Gottlieb, although he didn't design too many games, he had a lot of ideas that he revised on some of the games. And some of those were, for an example, Bronco or Mustang. If you guys know that there's three drop targets on a Bronco or Mustang game. That game was originally designed with five drop targets. And when they put it in the test room, he told me that one of the interesting notes on that was that you could not make the shot, for there's hole saucers up at the top left and right. And that behind the drop target, there is space between the targets, in the middle of the play field, and there's a mini post behind there. And what would happen is when you would shoot for that shot, the mini post was blocking that. So he actually just took the target down and then, kind of sanded down or a little bit around there where the post was and smoothed it out. So then when the game came out in production, it only had the three drop targets. I thought that was kind of a cool note. Another interesting note of a game he revised was a Surfer or Surf Champ, if any of you guys played that. That game was exactly the way it is, but he installed a spinner, the spinner in the middle of the game. That was his idea to put a spinner there. And I thought that was pretty cool. Now moving on here to Pyramid. This is a Ed Krinsky design. Same game as Cleopatra. They made this game three ways: the four-player Cleopatra EM, the Pyramid two-player, and then the Solid State. This is one of my favorite games of the time as well. I think it's a very nice symmetrical design game. It's a unique where the color, you have to match the color coding with the drop targets. I've always liked the colors. This is a very, very pretty game. And this particular one is a sample. This is sample number two off the line that I found. I came across this game in Kansas, actually. But I love going out finding these games. They're out there, and you just kind of, this one was a very low play. I believe it has either 14,000 or 20,000 plays. I can't remember, but it's just same exact play field as Cleopatra. Even the scoring is the same on the Pyramid. And move on here. I believe 905? 905, I believe that's what they say. They actually made about 1,600 of the four-player Cleopatra EMs. Surprisingly, they just don't show up very often, but they actually made a decent run of those. Here's an interesting game. This is Bally Hocus Pocus. It's really not all that rare of a game, but I always thought what was interesting with this game was that it's the same play field. If any of you guys know, it's the same play field as the Bally Home models of the time. They made Galaxy Ranger, the Fireball, Elton John, and Evel Knievel. And if any of you have seen the flyer for the Fireball, one of the flyers I've seen actually shows a picture of the spinner that I'll show on one of these photos coming up. the spinner has a top hat on Hocus Pocus, and when you hit the spinner, it spins, and there's a rabbit coming out. And there's actually a picture of that on the flyer for the Fireball. I don't know why they threw that on there. They usually have the PAL written on the home model games, but because they were in that same time, and that was, it was interesting. This game here is another very low play game. It's not a new old stock play field. It was just very low play, and sometimes you find these in Aladdin's Castle, some of the Bally's from 76. I'm guessing, again, because of the solid state era coming out, that most operators just, you know, put these games up on a shelf somewhere, or just stored them in a warehouse because everybody wanted, you know, a solid state Freedom or Knight Rider or something like that at the time. And these games came out in 76 as well. That's pretty cool. Let's see. There's the back glass. Hot tip. That's another game that's in the Classics tournament here this year. A game they made both ways. They made Solid State and the EMs. The one interesting note about the mechanical hot tip is that the scoring is much higher. The spinner on the mechanical one is 1,000 when lit and 100 when not lit, and I thought that was odd that the solid state game was 100 points when lit on the spinner and 10 points when not lit. You would think it'd be the other way with the EM, you know, scoring lower. But I believe the reason why was the bonus feature on the solid state goes up more. You can get 5x multiplier instead of just double bonus. So they put more emphasis on the bonus than they did on the scoring. Same with the captive ball. The captive ball feature there is 30,000 points when lit. It's 3,000 when lit. I mean, 30,000. That's a pretty big shot for one captive ball shot. But you have to score your points more than rely on the big bonus game with that version. This brings us to this Ready Aim Fire. I was going to talk a little bit more about this game. And before I get into that real quick with Ready Aim Fire, I just wanted to mention that if any of you guys out there, is there anybody out there that collects, that looks for rare games specifically, or most people just, I was just wondering, because some people, it's strange to go find these games just for that reason. I like to find, every game, is usually unique and fun, but I like to look for the little bit more odd games just for the reason of the rarity sake. So, that's an interesting note. Ready Aim Fire, they made 390 of them. I found this game kind of by accident. That's what's interesting. I find a lot of these rare games by accident. I was out looking for a solar ride a guy had, and he only had it listed. So I went out to look at it, and I looked in the corner, and he had this Ready Aim Fire there, and it has all the test papers with it. It says, "Dear Test Operator," came with a letter from Gottlieb. Really unique game. But, because the game is not a very popular design, a lot of people just probably just kind of put it to the side. It's got 5 pop bumpers, and it's very interesting because there's not a lot of shots you can really make at these spot targets that are behind the bumpers. But you have to shoot the ball, as you see in this picture, you have to kind of shoot the ball up into the pop bumpers and hope it kind of ricochets there off the spot targets to score your animals. You have bears and giraffes and tigers and all that, and it plays a lot of the kind of carnival music. It's really bright, colorful game. It said that in the letter that it mentioned that we're looking for something that at this time, I guess in 83, this game came out in 83, so 83 and 84 was a pretty hard time for the industry. So they were trying to reach out for a few different ideas with what they had to work with. And that's what was, that brings an idea to me about games like Rocky and some of these other games. I've always wondered why, Rocky, Qbert's Quest, some of these games, they made quite a few of those, but it's amazing how hard they are to find. I think they made over 1,500 Rockies, and you just... still never see them. I don't know if a lot of them went overseas or they're just not around. But this game, like I said, all these 3 games I have from the Milestar collection are sample games. And this one has a couple interesting notes on it that I'll get to here. This is a System 80. This was going into System 80A, they called them, right after the System 80 series. There you can see, if you read, look close, it's kind of faded there on the label, but it's a sample, July 26, 1983. That was kind of interesting. And then I've got, also, it came with some papers there showing the test. This was also kind of an interesting paper that came in the game. They were kind of showing you games, Mad Planets there. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, is Mad Planets the game that this game was supposed to be? Is that right? I believe. But did they make, what was the game? I believe, Sam, were you telling me that was there a game that Ready Aim Fire was supposed to be a test name, or I thought that they had another name that they were going to use as. A lot of times, that's what happened. Operators, or I mean, I'm not. I mean, the designers would design the game to be something else, and then when they would go to the artists, you know, they would paint their own art of what it was, you know, intended to be. And I couldn't remember. I thought this game was supposed to be something to do with planets or something with the original theme of the game. And that was the letter from Gottlieb that came in the game. It was kind of cool. It had a little metal plaque on there from Milestar. And I thought that was the coolest thing, you know, to open this game up and see, you know, some of this stuff in there. And I guess you can kind of read that there. It's kind of cool. But, I guess so far, you know, what I've got to hear, anybody, you know, any questions on some of this stuff so far about some of the games that, these Gottlieb games, or anything about... what would you like to get? Well, let's see. I would... there's a few games, yeah, I'm out there looking for. I'd like to find a nice rack-em-up game was another Milestar game. The other one was The Games, from the Olympic Games was the title. And that's another fun game. I like, right now though, I'm kind of getting into a pretty broadened area. I'm starting to get into some of the Bally games of the EM. So really anything low production. If I could find some of the late model Solar Ride EM, or, you know, I know sometimes those pop up, or I've had several of those, but other games in that System 1 series that are EM. But I'm always looking for, you know, something like that. Now, I'll go on here. This is a game I recently found. This is a Bally Roundup. They made 70 of these games. It's one of those series of games with Bally where they made, I don't know, it seems like their sample run numbers were always right around 70 or 80 of those games. And I know Brian Saunders out there, he's the Bally man. He's got the biggest collection of the Bally rare stuff. So if you need to know anything about those games, he's the guy you need to talk to. But yeah, I like these games. I don't know if this is a Ted Zell design or not. It doesn't say anywhere. I didn't see that on the database or in any books or anything. It looks to me like a Ted Zell game. It came out in 1971. One of the interesting things about Roundup was, I believe it's the first game to use the. I want to call it the diamond door, the Bally door that had the sticker that you could put on the front, because before that, they were using the doors that were just the solid door at this time period. But the first game might have been Red Max. There was no flyer made for Red Max, but it has the diamond-shaped door, too. So I believe that might have came out just before Roundup did. So they were really close in there. Roundup's a really interesting game. It's too bad it didn't make full production. They made a flyer for this game. I guess it's the most rare game Bally made with a promotional flyer that they really never fully produced. Unless I know there may be a few more out there, but that's the only one I saw. And Bull, yeah, I guess there's a couple more, but it's got a unique feature. It's a little bit like Gottlieb Spinnacard. When you hit the hole saucer, this light, it hits a spinner under the playfield, and these lights there just rotate around. and it's really kind of neat. And it starts fast and it slows down, and then you score either between 2,000 and 5,000 points. You can double that by hitting the left target near the top up there. And there's also a cool skill shot. I love EMs that have skill shots on there. That's really cool that you have something that you really have to go for at the start of the game. That's another interesting note about the Rockstar out there, because the Rockstar still has the skill shot for 10,000 points on the lanes at the top, but you can't move the lanes. You just have to start with wherever the three lanes are lit for 10,000, and once the game scores any points, that light goes off. So you can't keep going to the top and collecting the lit 10,000 point shot, which was kind of unique. The skill shot works here. It lights bumper. There's two rollover buttons at the top, and it's interesting because this game, to me, it's almost like it's a three-step process to get this 1,000-point pop bumper. The reason I say that is that the first plunge, you try to light the bumper by running over that spot. The rollover button there, and that lights the bumper 4,000. And this game has the gate, and you can open the gate on the out lane. So when you're playing, if you open the gate while the bumper's lit, then you can replunge it to hit the bumper for the 1,000 and keep going for that if the gate's open. But once the ball drains, that light goes back off, and you have to light it again for each ball in play. Being a two-player game, it has to reset. It's not it's a ball in play feature, not a game feature. And the same there, there's the hole saucer on the right always collects a spinner value. The middle hole saucer, you have to run over the other rollover button at the top. That's why it was almost like two skill shots, because it's hard to hit them both on the same, with just one plunge. It can happen, but it's extremely rare. But if it rolls into that, then it also gives you the spin value there. And a lot of the mushroom bumpers and stuff, those are really cool. And some of those old Bally games.
There are two other Bally games from the same year that also had skill shots. I can think of as 4 Minute BC and Fireball, and they're also both from 1971.
Yeah. Oh yeah, 4 Million BC. That's a lot like Fireball. They both have the same with the elevated plate. Yeah, the ramp. Yeah, and they did come out at the same time. One of the reasons, I don't know if they were going with a different style on the chrome of the door or not, but going by the flyer reference, that was always interesting to me that El Toro shows they advertise the new door on that. On the flyer, there's a little, picture there that says, featuring their new, I call it the diamond-style door. But that came out after Fireball, and Fireball had that door, and they made a lot of those games, and so did this game, and Double Up, and... the other rare game I mentioned, Red Max, which I believe was the first to use that for Bally. That's a good question. Now, does anybody know that? If the sticker that's on the door of those Bally games, did they ship that with the game, or did some games come with that? A lot of the flyers, the picture, there's no sticker on the door, right, on a lot of the flyers,
Flyer,
right.
I believe it was shipped in the game because it was an operator choice to put it on because people were peeling off.
Yeah, the games that came, I know KISS has that in the flyer as well. When they used the Susan B. Anthony sticker, they were showing that a lot on the games. I don't know if the older games, if that was optional or not. I don't know if anybody, knows anything about that or not. But that was, that is an interesting question, because I've always wondered about putting those on there on the game. Because... Yeah, I do know a collector in Indianapolis that came across a home use only Paragon game, and it was interesting because he it had all the stuff from the distributor in there and everything, and it has no sticker on the door. It was kind of interesting, so that kind of proves the point there, because I thought about, well, I asked him one time, I came by, do you want to, you can buy those stickers, to stick on the door. He's like, I don't know if it was supposed to be on there. I said, well, you're probably right if it wasn't on there, and you could tell nobody had ever, from what I, taken it off. But, But do we have any more questions about anything about some of the stuff I've talked about that you guys would like to? Okay.
Curious, do you know, were These sample games actually sold to different operators or a specific operator, or were they placed out there just for marketing feedback?
That's a good question. Do you know the answer?
They were actually sold eventually because their games, I got four, which was a test piece.
Yeah.
Deservedly so, I would say. And the operator did have to report in. You know, that was part of the deal of getting the game.
Did he get it at a discount or?
I don't think so. They have an exclusive on it. If it turned out to be a good one, they have the exclusive on the game for however long it took. But the good thing about Bally is that games could fail. Gottlieb, in that same period, anything they put up as the sample run, it was going to go into production, whether it deserved to or not.
Yeah.
See me separately, and I'll tell you what you're
Some of the Gottlieb games, another game I've got, interesting game, is Astro Danny and the Aliens game. And again, they made two 11, somewhere in there at that game of the production run number. And I really do not know what, you know, with those games makes them between, you know, like you said, a sample game. I don't really know if that can, you know, certain games that they made extremely rare games like Crawl and Going Nuts, they made 10 of those and stuff. And these other ones, I don't know if that's, when that became a full production game, what number, you know, they started to consider that just an extremely low run, or if those games are, you know, I really don't know between that.
I've got a comment on, and I don't know if this is absolutely true or not for Astro Danny, but some games are specifically designed to use up a certain amount of obsolete inventory.
Okay. Yes, that's correct. I talked to John Buras about that, and he was telling me that they had with Astro Danny was just pretty much up on the shelf, and the reason they made that number of them was to get rid of the System 1 boards, and they had so many or something like that. That was the last of their run. That game came out in almost 81, like December 1980. And it had the headboard of a System 1 headboard, and it was all the System 80s were wide bodies. It's a standard size field, but it has the interesting backboard that looks like the System 80s. And one thing interesting, I don't know if anybody knows this about Astro Danny, or if this is correct or not, but that game came out right after Torch, or when I say right after, I believe they'd started their system, some of the System 80s, but it's interesting that's purple. Inside of my Astro Danny, it's a purple cabinet on the inside, kind of, you know, and I wondered if that had been part of another game on these low runs that they just kind of, you know, we're just going to repaint the game. And the same with this Roundup. It's got a green cabinet with yellow speckle paint. The reason I say that is around the flipper buttons, that game has the Bally lift out where you lift the whole glass with the metal frame on it out, you know. And underneath that, where there's a little bit of wear on the cabinet, you can tell it's where the orange paint is gone, it's green, and it's got yellow specks there. So again, maybe 4 million BC, some of these games came out the same time. It makes you wonder, Brian, you know anything about that?
Roundup has a blue cabinet.
Well, it's got a blue cabinet, and mine is definitely green. And you can tell it's even got a little yellow, you know, it looks exactly like it was another game that was underneath that cabinet, and they just painted them. And that's really, really pretty interesting that they decided to do that, I guess, if that's, you know, don't know for sure if that's what that is, but I think so.
When you go about you collecting your games here, do you at least know ahead of time what you're looking for, or you just randomly come across it, or what do you use for a reference to find out, well, there's only 75 runs?
I use I just go on the internet on the pinball database, and you can look up by artist or by game. That's a really great site as far as looking at production runs, and they update it all the time. There's always new pictures coming in there. And a lot of times I kind of know what I'm looking for with these games, that I look for those for a reason, like you said, because I've done some research on them. And you either go by designers, or you go by, you know, the game that you like about the game, but I don't know. I just pretty much, you know, try to find a game. And again, sometimes you seek those games out. And like I've said before, a lot of the games that I've found in my collection of the most rare games have all, I mean, I know Eye of the Tiger, the Ready Aim Fire, this Roundup. A lot of these games were really, I kind of stumbled across them on accident, kind of. I even came across a, you know, just what, you know, lots of games like that. Just off the top of my head, I can't, you know, trying to think. But it's funny because, you know, you'll see a game advertised and you call the guy up. Do you have anything else? Well, I think so. I got this, this. And it's really interesting how those come up. So I guess I would say to people, if you're looking for, you know, sometimes you find by, you may not know what'll show up, but it's a good way to kind of find by accident, almost just call somebody randomly selling machines. And if they've got, you never know what they're going to have. And that's, you know, wow, you know, you never know what you're going to come across sometimes like that, which is pretty cool. That way too, but that's cool. And yeah, I don't know.
Some games I can think of that seem to be rare because I didn't see many of them. I don't know the production numbers, but RoboCop was one of them.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I remember that in Data East. Do you guys remember Expo? You guys came again, like I mentioned, in the early 90s. I remember all the way up until 90. Well, I came in 94. I didn't come in 95, but do you guys remember the Phantom of the Opera that they had here with the Bose speaker system in it? That would just shake the whole room. It was this pretty amazing game. And that was interesting. A lot of those games that RoboCop and some of those games, I believe there was a Michael Jordan game, and they had some of those there at their booth that Data East would bring here. And yeah, that was I can remember those early expos. That was really interesting when you'd come and there were the four manufacturers and the tournament games would be back-to-back, and there must have been, gosh, I don't know how many Party Zones and Cue Ball Wizards and some of those early years, just 20, maybe 20-some games or more for tournament games.
Yeah. Record is another one that occurs to me. You couldn't read anything on the machine that told you how to make extra ball games. Just figure it out.
Yeah, Barracora, yeah.
Firepower 2, there was only one in the whole Chicago area I knew of, and it never worked right.
Yeah.
And then there was one called Black Water, which I think about
dirt bike.
Yeah. And hot dogging.
Yeah, it's like snowboarding or something. I believe hot dogging was or something like that. Yeah, but I grew up playing those games, those ballet games. Those were really good games. I mean, that was just a time where, you know, you could go, you know, play these games and rack up a bunch of credits. You know, the specials. They had so many specials on those games at that time. And I agree with that.
The other thing about the test pieces is they don't know what the percentaging should be yet, so they sometimes go out with really low scores or they need to put more posts in somewhere.
Yeah, that's an interesting note. I mean, some of the sample games, I've always wondered, is there anything really different? I've had a few pyramids over the years, and the sample pyramid that I have now, when I say it's number two, the reason I believe this, Bally always started the run with 1,000, and you could always look and say if your game, you know, is one whatever the number was. But Gottlieb, they never really did that. They didn't start with one low number all the time. And the sample runs, though, one of the other pyramids was a sample game, and I believe, you know, say it was number 11, maybe 1115, and this other one is 1002. I don't know how many samples they made, if they made 100 of them, or if they made, you know, just, you know, how many they would have made with the S stamped in those games. I don't know if anybody knows particularly how many Gottlieb sample games they would make. But a lot of times there was not a lot of difference in the game. I believe in the pyramid, the only difference is there was a couple extra plugs in the game where, I guess, if you, for test purposes, you know, it would have a couple options that they didn't have on the others, like where the chimes would plug in maybe a different couple different ways, or just, you know, they would just throw in some odd stuff in there, I guess, you know, for so before they made a full production game. Otherwise, the same game. I mean, I didn't really see anything really different about it, but yeah.
The Pyramid and Cleopatra, they would have done most of the debugging on the four-player, Cleopatra EM.
I think Pyramid even came out like in 78, like after that, which was interesting because the Solid State may have came out first. I don't know. Maybe the EM did. They were right around the same time. But, yeah, that was an interesting note that Gottlieb would keep making these games, some, you know, these EMs, and for so long, you know, as long as they could. And
In the EM era, the four player would come out first, cost more money. So the operators who really want the hot title first would have to spend the most money. And those were the ones that were sampled and tested and prototyped. Whereas the parallel two player is basically just following the production design that was already established for the four player.
Yeah, I mean, some of those games too, you have to find, if you're looking for a rare game like that now, and you know, today, you'd have to find any example you basically can if it's a game you're really looking for. Because I remember the only game that I passed on a long time ago that I wish I'd got was at one point in West Virginia, I knew a guy who had the Spacewalk as a countdown, the EM version of Countdown. And this would have been, again, a long time ago. This is probably 15, 20 years ago, but at the time I was not really into collecting those games at the time, and the game had also been sitting in a barn where pretty much, I mean, let's just say the game was there, you know, you could have restored it, but glass, you know, the playfield glass was broke, and it was just, you know, you need a new playfield and all that but at least it would have been, you know, you would have had the game, you know, to restore, because a lot of those rare games, it's interesting that you can find playfields and back glasses. I wondered about that. I thought maybe another reason with that would be some of those games where the glass was available for some of those rare games because the games are not in demand as much. You know, maybe people are always asking for a Wizard or a Kiss or, you know, a Captain Fantastic. But, you know, let's say you stumble across a rare game and, well, I need a glass, you know, for whatever, you know, an Alien Star or a Ready Aim Fire. I got a Ready Aim Fire glass from Steve, you know, Steve Engel, you know, Mayfair. In fact, I got all those glasses. I picked up another Alien Star glass. The Alien Star glass that came on my game was also an interesting note. It was all transparent in the back. It didn't have any of the gray masking paint. Do you know how you can see the game over and tilt and all that, shadows and stuff? Any of you guys ever seen a game that just had the glass didn't have any of the gray paint on the back? It was all see-through. It was kind of interesting. And I didn't know that for the longest time because that was my first game in 88. And I remember it looked like a Canon little yellow light just flashed at the end of the game. And then later that's the game over light, but it just didn't have anything there, you know. So I kept that glass and just I kind of have that aside. And I just put a new well-stock glass on the game. But that was interesting because the whole thing just lights up. There's no shadowing, and that's kind of what makes them look cool, you know, of course, having that on there. But I'd never seen one like that. And I asked a few people that got, you know, from Gottlieb about that, and they said all they could think of was maybe that when they were doing those early runs that the game came through and they just didn't have the two-step process of the paint. You know, maybe they didn't put the second paint down or the gray paint or mask down or whatever. But I know that you said I got the game in 1988, so it obviously wasn't a reproduction. Glad the game was only 3 years old when I got it, so it's pretty interesting. But yeah, you know, but yeah, those Gottlieb games, I like those games quite a bit, you know, and Bally, all the games. I got more into the Gottlieb and Bally than I did Williams, though, at that time, just from what I grew up playing. The operator, I assume, just could keep the Stern and Bally stuff going because they're compatible parts and stuff, and that's why they mainly only operated those old games at the time. But
have you ever seen the Golden TKO?
I've only seen the Tim Arnold's, and he basically built the game. You know, TKO. You know, that's pretty amazing. I saw the video on that, how he made that. There's one in the exhibit hall. I haven't even been in the exhibit hall yet. That's interesting. I guess there's one. I guess there's one here too. I didn't know. So. Oh, it is, and it's for sale.
Got your name on it.
But anyway, I guess that'll wrap up here, and I appreciate you. Oh, yeah? Thank you. Thank you.